Welcome, and thanks for listening to this Maven Team podcast. I'm Marissa Lubeck. The Mars Atmosphere and Volatile Evolution mission will target Mars's orbit and is slated to launch this November. The spacecraft has been assembled at the Lockheed Martin facilities near Denver, Colorado, where the team is getting ready to begin environmental testing. I'm here at Lockheed with Guy Butelschies, the Maven Program Manager, and Tim Preiser, the Chief Engineer, to discuss the mission from the engineering perspective. Thanks for speaking with me. How's the Maven mission different from other Mars missions, such as the MSL Curiosity?
I think the difference is primarily the unique data. We have obviously launched spacecraft to Mars, and we've found our way there through cruise, and we've gotten to the atmosphere. We've sampled the atmosphere. We've landed on the surface. We've taken science from the surface directly. Maven is going to take science from the atmosphere, which is the new part of this mission.
Yeah, and you know, all these other Mars missions, their primary focus has been kind of on the geology, looking at the surface. And what we know from the surface is that there used to be liquid water there. We can see ancient riverbeds, ancient shorelines of what looks like oceans, but the atmosphere is too thin and cold and dry right now to support liquid water on the surface. If you poured out water on the surface, it would immediately flash evaporate. So that's the big science question. What happened to the atmosphere? We're gonna look at the atmosphere. We're gonna look at what we think is the dominant player here, which is solar wind interacting with the atmosphere and basically causing the atmosphere to be lost to space. And so by studying that, we can use those models to, in a sense, travel back in time and say the atmosphere was thick enough and warm enough and wet enough to support this water on the surface from this time to this time. And if we know that, then we can start answering some of the questions. Could conditions have been right for life to evolve?
So Maven will continuously monitor the sun and its activity, as well as continuously sample the atmosphere and its responses to solar activity, solar wind, including the very, very weak magnetic field that Mars has today.
So all the Mars missions complement each other.
I think that's really the benefit of the NASA Mars programs, is it's not just one mission where we send it out, it does its stuff, and we're kind of done for another 10 or 20 years. We've been able to send spacecraft there every couple years, learning from the last one to dig even more into the science questions surrounding that planet. And I think a lot of people don't realize that all the Mars missions that you see NASA putting up there, they all have a piece of Colorado in them. Lockheed Martin has played a role on all of these Mars missions, and whether it's aeroshells, the structure that protected the large Curiosity rover as it descended to the surface, or in building the spacecraft like we're doing for Maven, you know, Colorado can take a lot of pride that they are part of all these missions to Mars.
Right here in our backyard.
Right here.
And how is this mission into outer space all the way to Mars relevant for us here on Earth?
Certainly the understanding of what has happened to the atmosphere at Mars is directly correlatable to what may or may not happen to the atmosphere here on Earth. It's the same solar system. The same physics are at work, and the sooner we can understand that, the sooner and more accurately we can propagate that back into something that we understand.
I was just standing in the viewing area overlooking your clean room, watching some people in bunny suits working down there. What phases of the mission happen there in the clean room, and why do you need to keep the spacecraft so clean? Does it potentially help protect the integrity of the data that Maven will be collecting?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a fun time in the mission. You know, we spend a lot of times preparing and designing to make sure that what we're going to build is actually going to do what the scientists want it to do. We spend years getting our designs ready before we actually build them. You know, it's not like your car. If your car breaks down, you can just go in there and fix it. So the spacecraft, once we launch it, we can't touch it again. So it's got to work. And so we take great effort to make sure that nothing's going to cause something to break. So assembling in a clean room, its first purpose is to keep everything clean, because if you get dirt or contaminants inside delicate electronics, you can cause them to fail, you can cause them to short out. But because we're a Mars mission, you don't want to contaminate Mars. Life may have evolved there, very simple forms of life. Who knows? There may be simple forms of life there now. And we don't want to contaminate a future Mars mission to say, you know, they get there and they discover some microbes there, and then all of a sudden they find out, oh, well, these are microbes that were brought by some earlier spacecraft to Mars.
Right. We don't want to contaminate the science we collect with things we took with us.
Where were the various Maven instruments developed, and what has Lockheed contributed to these instruments?
The instruments that Lockheed have are primarily the engineering aspects to get the spacecraft put together and get these science instruments to Mars. All of the science instrumentation comes from CU, the University of California, Berkeley. But the primary instrument going in and sampling the atmosphere is the mass spectrometer from the NASA Goddard Center.
And another payload that we happen to be taking is built by the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and it's actually a radio. It's a UHF relay radio so that we have the capability to talk to assets on the surface, rovers, landers. In case something happens that interrupts those communications paths, we will have the capability to talk to assets on the surface.
You're about to begin the environmental testing phase of the mission. What happens during this phase, and what do you have left to do before launch this fall?
As I said, this is a fun time because you actually see all your hard work coming together and actually turning into what all the scientists and engineers dreamed about years and years ago when they proposed this project. We've got a complete spacecraft. Everything's been all assembled. We've tested out the functionality. Now we need to make sure that this complete spacecraft's going to survive and operate as we expect out in space. So we've got a whole series of environmental tests that we run. Basically, we're going to shake it like it's on a launch vehicle, put it in a vacuum chamber where we pump out all the air. We actually have lamps to simulate the sun. We put liquid nitrogen around the walls of these things to take it down to the cold of space. For about 3 weeks, the spacecraft's going to be literally seeing the temperatures and the vacuum that it's going to see both on the way to Mars and while it's at Mars. And then later this summer, early August, we pack this thing up and ship it down to Florida to start getting ready to integrate on the Atlas launch vehicle.
And so it looks like everything is on schedule.
They are. A lot of people have worked really hard to make sure everything kind of comes together here, and we're right on schedule, right where we want to be.
And just because launch is coming up doesn't mean your work is done, right?
The MAVEN mission has a long future ahead of it. We launch in November of this year, get to Mars in September of 2014. The mission goes a year after that, and then based on its design and its predicted performance, it could go for another 10 years after that.
So we have actually a mission support area in this building where engineers that helped build it then become the people that are going to operate it and basically arrange for communications and make sure all the engineering subsystems are all working as expected. And then we work very closely with the Science Operations Center up in Boulder at LASP, where they're going to be basically coordinating all the science requests, figuring out what they want the instruments to do, and then taking a look at all the science data that comes back down, analyzing it, and then making decisions about what the next step should be. So a lot of people are going to be making sure that our baby does what it's supposed to when we're around Mars.
It's your baby.
It is our baby.
What will be the spacecraft's biggest challenges once it launches? And will you have any backup measures in place in case something goes wrong?
The one critical point you really can't do twice is orbit insertion. I mean, we're going to get to Mars on a certain date, and you got to go into orbit. Because if you don't do it on that date, you fly by the planet, you don't get another chance. Almost everything else, the spacecraft is designed to take care of itself. It will go into what we call safe mode. But we do have, for this Mars orbit insertion, there is a backup mission support area at Goddard Space Flight Center back in Maryland.
Have there been any engineering hurdles along the way or lessons that you've learned?
There's several.
How much time do we have?
One of my favorite ones is the decisions that we make today are based on a lot of experience. Most of those experiences are based on not so good decisions or poor judgment. You need to allow the engineers to innovate, and if they can survive the poor decisions, they learn and gain some experiences so that when they get to make decisions the next time around, you know, they're pretty sound and solid. The fact that Lockheed Martin has been in the Mars business since Viking, the experience base is very, very sound.
We're going to Mars, you know? I mean, it's not something that you just go and buy something off the shelf. You know, we're all familiar with consumer electronics where, you know, you're buying the millionth version of this. And because of that, you can kind of count on the fact that you've had years and years of millions of people testing these things out. Because ours are one of a kind, we don't have that. And so due to the complexity, part of our challenge as engineers is we got to make the design do what it needs to do to get the science. But also, we're going to be learning all the way out there how this hardware really, really reacts. And so we've basically got a 21-day launch window. And if we miss it, we got to wait for Mars and Earth to get back into those positions, and that's over 2 years later. And so part of our challenge as we go through the test program is, as we run across issues, respond very quickly to come up with fixes and get it back in the flow so that we stay on schedule for that launch date.
I imagine that overcoming these challenges you've described may turn into one of the more rewarding aspects of your job. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think part of being an engineer is you love a challenge. You love solving problems. I love these missions. I love the pressure of doing something where you know you've got to launch here. You and your teammates all have to work hard together to work these out really quickly. And there is a thrill when something comes in and you got a problem and you don't know how to solve it. And then, you know, you work with everybody and then you all figure out the solution. There's that aha moment. And then you put the fix in and you're back in the flow.
Yeah, there's a big difference in the efficiency that takes place in this line of business because of the fixed launch window. The launch window pressure that we have allows all of us to focus on the exact same goal for the exact same reasons. And when people do that, they're all pulling on the same rope in the same direction. And it makes a big, big difference, and it makes it very rewarding.
Well, Guy and Tim, thanks so much for speaking with us today.
Sure.
This podcast is a product of the Laboratory for Atmospheric and Space Physics. I'm Marissa Lubeck. Thanks for listening. Thank you.